RadioInfluence.com.
Welcome to the March 27th, 2019 edition of the MMA Report Podcast with Dale Galvan. I am Jason Foy. Come here on this week's edition of the show. We're going to talk about the latest with Conor McGregor, who on Tuesday or late Monday evening announces quote-unquote retirement. Then on Tuesday, a New York Times article comes out saying that Irish police are investigating Conor McGregor over a sex assault allegation. So we'll talk about that. We'll have four interviews for you. We'll talk about have conversation with Alex Perez, who fights on Saturday at UFC Philadelphia. So he'll be a part of that preliminary card on ESPN Plus as we'll be taking on Mark De La Rosa. Then we're going to have conversation with three fighters. We'll be a part of Friday's Bellator 219. Talk to one of them in the main event. Syed Awad, of course, takes on Brandon Gertz. Also talk to David Rickles, who'll be taking on AJ Matthews, and Sean Bunch, who'll be taking on Dominic Mazzada. The Sean Bunch and David Rickles fights will be a part of the post-slim card, which will air after the main card is over on the Bellator mobile app. So you'll hear those four interviews, and then we'll wrap up this week's podcast by talking about what happened last week in the Bellator and UFC fight cards and get you ready for this weekend's Bellator and UFC events. Daniel, you know, I like to refer to what we saw at 1 a.m. Monday night East Coast time as the quote-unquote retirement of Conor McGregor. It was very evident that this is a negotiating tactic. I think a lot of people saw right through it. But, boy, the timing of this New York Times piece is, I think it's a coincidence, first off. But I think one of the things when that article came across my timeline on Tuesday, my first thought was, oh, McGregor's camp knew this story was coming.
Absolutely. Look, I'm an individual who works at a news outlet. And if you're going to be a journalist, you'd have to give both sides of the story. So you're always going to reach out to comment to both parties, especially the party who you are reporting is under investigation. You're definitely going to ask that camp, what are your thoughts on this, etc. So undoubtedly, the camp knows that story is coming out, and that story has been out. You know, it's been reported from the local newspapers, and now in Ireland, now New York Times put a name to it. And all I can hope is, you know, justice is served in this situation. But this is the New York Times article is the most real thing that happened the past couple of days. In a couple of days of a lot of BS and malarkey, and. To some extent, you understand what Conor's doing in that this guy is trying to negotiate for, you know, this guy's trying to negotiate for the best deal a fighter has ever gotten in the history of the sport, which he probably deserves due to his drawing power. So that's what he thinks this tactic is the best. He has enough money to retire. But at the end of the day, like within 48 hours or 24 hours of his announcement prior to that, he was on the Tonight Show talking about looking for a fight in the summer. So it's not like this is something where he's retiring. This isn't like a George St. Pierre situation. I mean, he's 30 years old. He's already retired twice. So it's likely Conor McGregor is going to break the record for most retirements in MMA, which is a tough, tough place to climb. I mean, look at BJ Penn. He probably done it seven times. But I would absolutely be shocked if Conor McGregor doesn't compete again. And I would also be shocked if he doesn't retire like seven more times over Twitter.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. I mean, what was it, 2015, 2016, you know, retirements both there. But, you know, one of the things that, you know, sticks out to you about this New York Times article was, you know, right at the very first paragraph of it where the author of it says that, you know, Conor McGregor is under investigation in Ireland after a woman accused him of sexual assault in December, according to four people familiar with the investigation. Now, look, this story has been out there. I mean, everyone in the MMA media, anyone covering the sport in any fashion has seen this story. And we even talked about it a couple weeks ago. I thought the most interesting part of this was if there's rumors of you being, you know, accused of sexual assault and you're innocent, you would think you would be screaming to the rooftop that you're not. Now, of course, the article does note that, you know, Conor McGregor has not been charged with a crime, and it notes that following the protocol in criminal investigation in Ireland and much of Europe, where a formal charge did not necessarily follow an arrest, McGregor was arrested in January, questioned by law enforcement authorities, and released pending further investigation, according to the sources with the New York Times. Now, one of the things of that really stuck out to me about this piece, and I tweeted about it, and it was this paragraph where the writer of the story wrote, quote, McGregor and the UFC have not commented on the allegation. Karen J. Kessler, a publicist for McGregor based in New Jersey, said he was often the subject of rumors but would not directly address the validity of the allegation. Quote unquote, she says, we don't comment on rumors. Now, you know, Daniel, I put a tweet out there about this, and my tweet was this. If your client is reportedly being investigated for sexual assault and the answer to the reporter is we don't comment on rumors, what message is this sending? And one of the responses was, I wouldn't acknowledge a BS story either. I want to look to that person who's Josh Stanfield and say, if someone was accusing you of sexual assault and you are innocent, you're not going to try to clear your name? Like, to me, like, this is one of my two big takeaways of this whole Conor story, is if someone is allegedly accusing you of sexual assault and you're not going to comment on that, what message does that send?
Yeah, I mean, messages are always sent. You can't choose not to send a message. The message has been sent when you say no comment, when you say it's just a rumor, when you don't outwardly say, no, that's incorrect. We're not under investigation. Our camp is not under investigation. Conor isn't under investigation. If you don't dispel that immediately over such a serious allegation, the message being communicated is the article is correct. The article is right. That is what the message I am getting off of that messaging from Conor's PR person. And I guess that's a bad day in the office for the old public relations team for Conor. Like, you would think one of the highest paid athlete in mixed martial arts would have a PR person who has a better sense of, like, reality. But at the end of the day, Jason, it's pretty simple. Not communicating communicates very clearly. And again, like, this is a big deal. I don't know anything about the specifics of the case. Neither does someone throwing it away and say, like, and saying it's BS, because there's no way anyone who isn't a part of that situation, like, who's not in that victim's circle, isn't a part of the investigation among Ireland, or isn't in Conor's circle, like, those are the people who know the information. At the end of the day, everyone else who has an opinion about whether or not Conor is guilty or not, or it's malarkey, no one actually knows any information regarding what happened here, aside from a few details among online articles, which is hard to prove. So to be so outwardly confident one way or the other is just – you're just lying, because you don't know what you're going off on. So all I hope is, in that situation, you know, we have a big-time history in this world of, like, super powerful people getting off on crimes. Hopefully, I hope justice is served one way or the other. And that's all I can hope for. But I think it's important to take something like this absolutely seriously. And it starts with acknowledging it. And Conor's camp didn't do it.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things, and look, we don't know how the Ireland court system and investigations work. I'm just being honest about it. You know, one of the things you sticks out there, you wonder, with this incident allegedly happening in December, you know, we're now in the last week of March, kind of, you know, is this kind of typically how long it takes in Ireland? I mean, you know, here in the United States, usually these things happen, pretty quickly. Mentioning about McGregor's spokesperson, Karen Kessler, she said this to ESPN. Quote, the story has been circulating for some time, and it's unclear why it's being reported now. Interesting way to respond to this story. But then also she addressed how people are trying to connect Conor's retirement tweet to the report about this arrest, where she says, quote, the assumption that Conor's retirement announcement today is related to this rumor is absolutely false. She then goes on to take a shot at the UFC saying, quote, should Conor fight in the future, it must be in an environment where fighters are respected for their value, their skill, their hard work, and their dedication to the sport, end of quote. To me, that quote tells you exactly what that retirement tweet was, and that this is a negotiation tactic. And this leads to my other big takeaway from everything that's happened over the last 48 hours or so with the tweet and this New York Times story. In terms of the retirement, the losers in this, it's not Conor, it's not the UFC, because either way, both those sides are going to be fine. The loser in this equation is the fans, because whether you love or hate Conor, you know when Conor shows up to fight, he's going to put on a show, and he is well worth the price of admission. Look, if he's in there against a wrestler, he may get wrestled to death. Very true. But if you put him in there against a fighter that is going to sit there and have a stand-up fight with him, by God, I'm putting over my $60 because I know I'm going to get my money's worth.
Absolutely. I mean, he's definitely been a part of some of the biggest memories I have as a fight fan. I think the biggest loser, in addition to the fans, I think the biggest loser, if Conor stays retired, which I find very unlikely, is absolutely ESPN.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
because they're taking, they paid a lot of money to air the pay-per-views on there. Mm-hmm. And for a lot of these pay-per-views, they're taking a loss because these pay-per-views aren't going to draw a lot of buys. Especially look at the first two that are happening. I can't even remember. I know one of them is the Holloway Poirier fight.
Yeah,
I mean, and then the one after that.
The one after that, Daniel, is all. I mean, look, when you look at the April 13th pay-per-view, which I think it's a good 1-2 punch combination with the two interim title fights. I think that's a good punch when you got the lightweight interim fight between Holloway and Poirier and the middleweight fight between Gaslam and Adesanya. But you look at that 237 pay-per-view, the one that is in Brazil, which is going to be headlined by Rose Namajunas and Jessica Andrade. The co-main event is supposed to be Jose Aldo against Alex Volkanovski, but apparently he may be out of that event. I mean, like, you look at that fight card, and it's just, and I'll give credit here. I did an episode of the Insiders podcast yesterday, Sam Kaplan, and we were talking about this ESPN deal with UFC pay-per-views. And, I think the fear you got to be is that does the UFC still have the motivation to offer a premium content? Would they move mountains like they did at the end of 2018 to make sure that John Jones Gustafsson fight happened? If that was coming up here in April, would they move those same mountains to make that fight card happen?
And that's a great question, and I think the answer is no. I really don't think the UFC. I think the UFC is going to want to promote big fights. There's a financial incentive to do that, but to move mountains for short term situations, I don't think so anymore, because there is that security. Because when you did make those short-term moves, you made them because you absolutely – like, this was your only way of doing a respectable financing on your show. Now, but when you made those short-term moves, those affected you long-term. Those affected you. Maybe you could have done a better promotion for a John Jones fight a couple months later instead of bringing it out earlier. So – at the end of the day, decisions have damage and consequences. And before the ESPN deal, they had no safety net of the ESPN money for each and every pay-per-view. So they had to make the short-term call. Mm-hmm. Now they can make business as usual. Let's do our big fights when we want them. And the UFC 236 card with Holloway Poirier, which is infinitely better than UFC 237, I don't know the number, and I really need to know the number. But the number where it's like ESPN breaks even on a per pay-per-view basis for what they paid for. I don't know. I saw like 500,000 buyers out there, or maybe it might be. It's probably way lower than that. But whatever it is, I don't think Holloway Poirier 2 is going to do over 200,000 buys.
No, you look at the main card. You look outside of the top two fights. Your other three fights on the pay-per-view is Eric Anders versus Khalil Roundtree. Eric Anders actually will be a guest on this podcast next week. Aljo Buin against Dwight Grant, and Ovin St. Preux against Nikita Krylov. I mean, look, if you're going to fork over the $60, or maybe you're not a current ESPN Plus subscriber, and you're going to take advantage of that bundle deal they're going to offer, which is, I think, what's $79.99 for the, you get, you know, the one that you get the pay-per-view plus a full year of ESPN Plus. If you're doing that, you're doing it because of those top two fights. I mean, look, I think Max Holloway Poirier is a very premium fight. I'm interested to watch that fight, you know, but to me, for me to fork over that $60, I'm forking over the $60 for the top two fights. You know, the rest of the fight card, I view as a fight night card.
That's what it is, man. And the thing is, the moral of the story of what I'm trying to say is that Conor McGregor was one of the few hopes ESPN had to make a little bit of money off these pay-per-views. Because when you buy all these pay-per-views, the hope is once you get through a lot of these fight night cards with pay-per-view main events, you're going to have a few stellar pay-per-views a year that do 800,000, 900,000, maybe with Conor McGregor, 1.5 to 2 million buys that really drive people to ESPN+. Plus. When you make that deal, that top-end star – I think had to be one of the biggest motivating factors for ESPN to do such a sweetheart deal for the UFC. And when you take away a guy in Conor McGregor, that's where I see a big loss for ESPN. So I think UFC is in a strong negotiating point because they can absolutely go without Conor. But in order to make ESPN happy, to get him back in the cage, I think is what they should try and do. And if I'm being honest with you, I do think Conor McGregor fights this year. So that's my best guess, Jason, is we see a Conor McGregor fight in the UFC in 2019.
Oh, look, I would be surprised if Conor doesn't fight in the UFC in 2019. I mean, look, I at the end of the day, ESPN is going to sit there and say, look, we're expecting a Conor pay-per-view. I see at the end of the day right now, this negotiating feud, it hurts the fans because there is a lot of fights, you tell me, with Conor McGregor that just interest me. You know, you look at a trilogy matchup against Nate Diaz, the winner of Holloway and Poirier. That's a fight that I would love to see. I mean, I think it's, you know, I'd love to see a rematch between Holloway and Conor at some point. I mean, you look at Anthony Pettis, Donald Cerrone, Ally Quinta. I mean, there's so many fights I can look at 55 and 70 that make so much sense. And of course, Dana White did come out and confirm that, they were going to put him in a co-main event with a heavyweight title fight on top of it, which I was like, he's the biggest star in the UFC, and there's no one, and you're going to put him in the co-main. This infatuation the UFC has with a title fight has to headline a pay-per-view. I just want to watch great fights. I don't care if a title's on the line. That just doesn't mean anything to me.
Yeah, man, it's got to be infuriating. And there's got to be a lot of people in the room in the UFC who think the same way, because logically, putting Conor in the co-main event, it doesn't compute. You put it in the calculator, and the calculator literally melts down. So a lot of times in organizations, you have these people who are at the very top of the food chain, and their illogical rules are just mandates. Their stubborn analysis of the situation is just how things are done. But you've got to think there's plenty of people within the UFC that think it's just asinine that you would go and offer Conor McGregor, the biggest star in the sports history, a co-main event slot.
God, I mean, like, it's like another example of that is how Dana White's like, you know, as long as I'm running the UFC, we won't have a 165-pound weight class. And I'm like, hate to say this, Daniel. You know what it's going to take.
What's it going to take?
Someone dying on weigh-ins.
Yeah.
When Dana says that, I'm just like, I feel like he is part of the problem of this weight cutting culture, and that he could be a guy that helped changes the weight cutting culture that we have in MMA, where you see fighters. I mean, look, we saw last week. I mean, look how awful Luis Pena looked when he was trying to weigh in and make 145 pounds. And Luis, you know, came out and said, hey, I made some mistakes, but I just sit there. And every time I hear Dana White just, you know, adamantly like, no, we're not going to have 165 pound weight class, I'm like, unfortunately, something bad is going to have to happen for him to realize it.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, it's sad. I feel like he's in such a great position to sit there and help move this sport ahead and evolve this sport. And it's just like, and is it wrong of me to sit there and think he's like, that he thinks this is going to screw up his record books?
That may be a deep, dark reason for why in his subconscious, for sure. He may screw up the record books.
Dude, it's one of these things that I'm just like, what is going on here? I mean, that to me is just the part of this that is just, I don't understand it, man. I don't understand it.
Yeah. I mean, again, that's just what happens when you have a guy who's stubborn. Dana's done plenty of positive for the UFC, but when you, oh, and the sport, but when you're in the position that Dana's been in for such a long period of time, I mean, there is a certain degree of responsibility to be a positive influence and a positive change in a guy who moves the sport in the right direction. And when it does come to weight cutting, Dana has absolutely failed in that aspect from his position of power. So there's no bones about it. I mean, he's had a positive influence, I think, in the sport, but there are plenty of negatives for the inaction or the things he has not chosen to do that are absolute no-brainers. And a lot of it, I think, is tied to his ego and tied to his beliefs.
Look, I am truly shocked that Bellator hasn't adapted 165-pound weight class. I thought they would. And maybe it'll come at some point. Maybe that's after the featherweight tournament, maybe a 165-pound tournament is the way, you know, Scott Coker's going to introduce it. But I'm surprised by it. But yeah, this Conor story, it's going to evolve. I'm sure by the time, you know, we get to next week, something else is going to happen.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Conor always finds a way to get his name in the news.
Look, and he, you know, look, as two people who make money, you know, doing this podcast, I don't know how many MMA podcasts out there make money, but we make money doing this thing, you know, thanks to all of our great sponsors. It is that when you're a week of the Conor fight, it's by far some of the biggest podcast numbers we draw. I mean, it's just, that's a reality. So you know we definitely want Conor McGregor fighting, because it definitely helps the business of Jason Foy and Daniel Galvan out.
Yeah. Oh, dude, you know, Conor McGregor has really, I don't know what to say, man. I mean, he changed the sport in a huge, huge way. Mm-hmm, yeah. By getting eyeballs on the TV. And so I definitely hope he fights again. But also, as a human being, I do hope the sexual assault investigation, I mean, I hope it goes well in terms of, like, his influence and the fact that he's such a big superstar plays no role in it.
At the end of the day, we don't know what the truth is. You know, we don't. I mean, and that's why I think you would like to hear Conor McGregor come out and say what he wants. But the silence is, man, when you're reportedly, you know, being, you know, investigated for sexual assault and you're not commenting, I understand there's probably a lawyer telling him not to comment. But, man, that sends a message, though.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a serious, serious allegation. And not to pay respect to that allegation is speaks volumes.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see what happens kind of on that. But coming up next is going to be the interview portion of the podcast. Up first, you're going to hear from Alex Perez, who's going to be a part of the UFC Fight Night car comp on Saturday from Philadelphia, as he's going to be taking on Mark De La Rosa, a part of the early prelims on ESPN Plus. Also, in that interview, we talked a little bit about the Joseph Benavidez situation there with him, and kind of looking, still trying to get that thing overturned. Then you're going to have three interviews from fighters to be part of Friday's Bellator 219. You hear from one of the men in the main event of the fight card, Syed Awad. Had a really fun conversation with Syed. Always love talking to him. And part of the conversation you hear is where we talked about when he realized that he had power in his hands, which a little teaser, it was actually in his third pro fight, and he tells a really interesting story about that. Then you're going to hear my conversation with the caveman David Rickles as he takes on AJ Matthews, two Bellator vets who've been around Bellator a long time. Great conversation with David Rickles. And the final interview you're going to hear is my conversation with Sean Bunch. Of course, returned to Bellator last year, has been on a roll since his initial exit from Bellator. He takes on Dominic Mazzara. So I had a chance to catch up with Sean and talk to him about his matchup. So here's my conversation with Alex Perez, Syed Awad, David Rickles, and Sean Bunch. Joining me now here on the MMA Report, a man that's going to be a part of the UFC Fight Night card in Philadelphia as he moves up to 135 pounds. It's Alex Perez. Alex, I appreciate the time. Obviously, I guess that's part of the kind of the little bit of a narrative heading in this one. It's at 35. But before we get there, I know you had talked about appealing the loss to Joseph. Did anything ever happen there?
No, I think they're because last time they commission got together, they had like John Jones, Conor McGregor, Khabib stuff. So it wasn't on this one. Hopefully the next one. We'll see what happens.
I mean, are you hopeful at all?
It is what it is. At the end of the day, I still lost. You know, doesn't change the fact that I still lost. Just want to see what would happen. And if it doesn't change, oh well, not a big deal.
Is it one of those things where has it been hard to kind of move past that because of how that fight ended?
No, I think you have to have like a short memory. You know, it's a one fight. It's not the biggest fight. You know, it's not the last time you're going to fight. So you just got to move on. Shit happens.
Obviously, while the UFC has not said what's going to happen with 25, we kind of, the writing's a little bit on the wall there. You know, so pretty much was, you know, you and your team kind of, after that fight was over, was the decision made, hey, let's go up to 35?
No, they just offered me this fight at 35. So if they would offer me at 25, I would have taken it. You know, whatever they want me to do, 25s, 35s, doesn't matter. It's goal's still the same. Just a new weight class if I stay here.
I gotta imagine that makes fight week a little easier, you know, as not having to cut much weight. I mean, but did you end up, you know, changing up your strength and conditioning with this being at 35 as maybe a routine that you would have done at 125 pounds?
No, like one thing with me, I stay consistent. Like even after my fights, I'm in the gym. Like if I can't train, I'm trying to lift. If I, you know, can't lift, like something's wrong with my arm, I'm doing legs. I'm always trying to get bigger. I'm always trying to get better. I'm always trying to get stronger, you know. So nothing really changed. I just kind of stayed with the same program. You know, obviously, I was able to lift a little bit heavier. But other than that, it's all the same.
Of course, we're talking, we're 1 week out from the fight. I know you're in Nashville helping out your teammates. When you're with your teammates and you're not fighting, it's them, and you know you've got a fight coming up. I mean, is there a part of you that's like, God, man, I wish I was fighting on Saturday?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you're already here. I, you know, watched them sign the posters. I was just watched them earlier do the pictures and stuff like that. It's like a, but I just got to remember, like, next week's my week. This week's about him. I'm getting great training in with Coach Colin, and Jeremiah is here. So getting some good jiu-jitsu with them. So a little bit more one-on-one stuff where if I was at the gym, everybody's at the gym. Coach is focused on me, but he's also focused on, like, you know, 10 other people with fights coming up and stuff. So it's cool that I get one-on-one attention.
How would you say you've evolved as a martial artist since November?
Just being composed in there, being more relaxed, you know, not getting so crazy when someone hits me, you know, trying to come back and hit them. I just stayed more relaxed, learned how to be more patient, work kind of for my game.
I've heard a lot of guys talk about that, and they'll say, you know what, you're working on being relaxed in the gym. They're throwing everything at you in the gym to not make you relax, and then fight night comes and it goes all out the window. Are you concerned with that though?
Nah, if it happens, it happens. You know, I'm in good shape, so if it goes out the window, I know I can swing for 15 minutes. You know, I'm not too worried about it.
Has it ever happened with you? You're going into a fight. You're like, oh man, I'm gonna relax, and all of a sudden, you know, opponent lands a jab on you. You're like, oh no, okay, we're going at this now.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've had a lot of fights, so it's happened a few times where, man, I'm going to go out there and do this to this guy, and then I get hit. Like, oh, here goes this. That goes out the window, you know. But I've been working on just staying more relaxed, more composed, trying to work my game a little bit better.
I've talked to coaches so many times, and they'll say, like, you, they'll have some game plan going in, and then they say, man, when things happen, they're like, well, there went the game plan. I mean, I got to imagine that's happened to you, not just as a fighter, but also as a cornerman, where you're like, you see something happen, you're like, oh, man, game plan just went out the window.
Oh, yeah. You know, it happens all the time. You watch fights, your cornering fights, you can see the game plans just change in between the rounds. In between the corners, when you had a minute to talk, game plans change a lot. So it all just depends.
When you look at Mark De La Rosa, what sticks out to you about, you know, what he brings to the octagon?
Man, he's tough. He comes to fight. That's the biggest thing. Like, he comes to fight. He's gonna be in your face. He's gonna throw. You know, he's here for 15 minutes. So that's the biggest thing that sticks out to me. He comes to fight. He's good everywhere. He's good on the ground. He's good on his feet. Solid. He has good conditioning. I've seen him push the pace his last couple fights. He's well-rounded, but his biggest attribute has to be that he comes to fight.
Is it how different of a fight is he as opposed to, say, Joseph?
Joseph kind of used more footwork. De La Rosa just comes forward. Like, he's going to be in your face. He's going to make it an ugly fight. He's just come in your face, not back out.
Is it hard to get that type of fighter out of their element where they don't all of a sudden are not that forward-pacing guy?
It just all depends, honestly, like what you bring to the table. I mean, who knows? You might have changed it up this fight. You might be using more of his angles and stuff. It all just depends on what he's bringing. Sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. For guys in rhythm, it's hard.
What do you believe is your key to victory in this one?
Honestly, staying composed. Like, when he throws these big, you know, big punches at me, just staying relaxed. Like, he hits me, okay, I'm in a fight game. I'm going to get hit. If I get all crazy where he hits me and I'm trying to chase a knockout or something, you know, I might run into something.
You mentioned earlier that, look, they offer me a 25, I'll take 25. They offer me 35, I'll take 35. But as you look at the future, what do you think it holds in a weight class, or is it the mindset just simply is, you know what, whatever division they offer me, I'm good to go?
Yeah, whatever division. Like I tell people, it might be a new division. It's the same goal, 25s and 35s. I'm looking to be, you know, one of the best in the world. So same goal, different weight class. Same weight class, it doesn't matter to me.
And, of course, it all goes down here coming March 30th, UFC on ESPN2, live from Philadelphia. Of course, headlined by Justin Gaethje, Edson Barboza. Alex, man, as always, I appreciate your time. Of course, let everyone know they can follow you on social media, and, of course, those sponsors that are supporting you for this one.
You can find me on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Alex Perez MMA. And I just want to say thank you to all my sponsors. ATTC, always have my back, Milk and Eggs. Groceries, you know, they're helping me out. Always Ready Meals, my meal prep, Perfecting Athletes, you know, with my diet, and then also Miss Mary Jane CBD for recovery. Just thank you guys. Really appreciate all you guys, my management team for working for me and helping me out. Team and family, thank you guys for all the support.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report is one of the men that will be in the main event of Bellator 219, Friday night, March the 29th. It is Syed Awad. Syed, as always, I appreciate time. I was on your social media, your Twitter timeline, and saw that you had tweeted a picture of you being on the billboard there. What's that mean to you just personally?
Hey, what's up, Jason? Always good to talk to you. It's cool, man. It's pretty cool. You know what I mean? It's not just about a billboard and, you know, the advertising for your face up there. It's more about, for me, that's my hometown. You know what I mean? Little Dallas on a busy intersection in San Bernardino, and that, you know, that's where I grew up, and that's where, you know, not too many people make it out of San Bernardino. You know what I mean? There's a lot of bad stuff that goes on over there, and you know, people kind of get stuck. They get stuck, you know, living that lifestyle, and that's why they never make it out. And so to see me on a billboard on the intersection that I passed through growing up, you know, throughout middle school and high school, and to see it, you know, over there, it was pretty cool. And yeah, I hadn't even seen it yet. I actually had one of my friends that I grew up with took a random picture, and I hadn't even talked to dude in months. He's like, dude, check this out, and he sent it to me. So, you know, it's there. You know, it's there for people to see, and it's pretty cool, man. It feels good. You know, I worked hard to get to this moment, and I have to have a lot more hard work to do to get past through this moment, and that's just part of the journey, man. Part of the journey, part of it that comes with it, and I'm trying to enjoy every moment of it.
Of course, everyone can follow you on Twitter at SyedMMA. You quoted a tweet that was, you know, really highlighting about Mark Munoz and his career, and you had said not just a great coach, a great person. Thank you, Mark, for all you've done. What has Mark meant to you, and how he's had you evolve as a martial artist?
You know, I've worked with Mark in the past, and then I went back to my old gym, and now I've been working with him for about the past year. Him and also Daryl Christensen, and Mark brings so much knowledge to this game. It's unreal. You know what I mean? That dude is just an encyclopedia, an MMA encyclopedia. Like, so many little things that he knows, that little tiny tweaks. I mean, we're working some wrestling drills yesterday, and I wrestled, you know, throughout high school. I was a pretty decent wrestler. You know what I mean? I made it to state championships here in California, which isn't easy to do, just wrestling, you know, 4 years. So I have a decent wrestling background. And we're working some stuff, and he showed me something so basic and so simple. And I was like, how come I never even learned this? He was like, dude, it's so simple. And it just, if I would have known that before, it would have changed everything in certain scenarios in wrestling. And I said, man, that's so simple, you know? And he was like, you know what's funny is I didn't learn this until I was in college. And I was like, you're kidding me. And it was just something so basic, you know? And every day I train with that dude, I learn something new. And, you know, and it's kind of hard to learn new stuff when you're training so long. I mean, there's so many things to learn, but when you're kind of doing the same thing over and over, you know, you kind of stick to the same things. You learn little things here and there. But with Mark, I feel like every time I train with him, I learn something new. And he's, you know, making me a better fighter. He's making me a better martial artist and, you know, a better person. If you talk to Mark, he's a great person to be around. He's, you know, real honest. He's a straight up guy, and he's just a cool dude.
I was, when I knew I was going to have you on the show, I went back and watched your fight with Benson again. And I don't know if this is the case. You tell me if I'm right or wrong. Would you say the way to describe that would be frustrating after, you know, the first round of him grabbing your glove, and then the third round, he you know, he's grabbing, you know, the back of the fence kind of hold position, even though the referee did finally spot it. Is frustration kind of the right way to kind of describe how you felt after that fight?
I shouldn't have got frustrated being, you know, having that many fights, you know what I mean? And, you know, I've got frustrated in the past and I've lost a fight from being frustrated. And it kind of happened again, and I thought I was past that. So now I know, you know, not to get frustrated no matter what position I'm in or what's going on. I think what made me more frustrating is, I mean, Benson, let's be honest, like, you know, a lot of us lightweights kind of, I wouldn't say looked up to him, but I admired him. You know what I mean? He was the UFC champ for the longest reigning UFC champ when I was still fighting local shows. So when I got the opportunity to fight him, I knew I was ready. I was prepared. I was, you know, ready to go. And to have somebody at that caliber have to cheat to get a win, it's like, dude, like, at least play fair. Like, you're the one with the credentials. I'm the one trying to get up there. You don't need to cheat to fight someone. You know what I mean? You shouldn't cheat anyway, you know, regardless who the guy is. But, like, give me my fair share. You know what I mean? Give me a fair fucking fight. You know, and then we'll see what happens. So I think that's what frustrated me more than anything, thinking that, you know, this dude's supposed to be the big shit. This dude's supposed to be the longest reigning UFC champ. He has all the credentials. And, I'm just a dude that knocks people out and has fun doing it. And then this dude has to cheat to beat me? Come on, man. Like, it's frustrating than anything.
And, of course, now you're in this main event here against Brand Gertz. You know, Brand, just like yourself, you know, longtime Bellator vet, been around, you know, and now this matchup happening here. But things haven't gone well for him. You know, what's kind of your assessment on what you see with him currently?
I mean, I think he's going to come out hungry. I mean, yeah, things haven't went well, but, I mean, look at the caliber of guys he's fought. You know, he fought, like, the best Bellator kind of has to offer. I mean, he fought Chandler in his last fight. I think when he fought Piccolotti, I think his name was, just seemed like Piccolotti had his number. You know what I mean? He just kept him away with long shots, and maybe Gertz was scared to go to the ground with him because the dude's a jiu-jitsu guy. So it kind of just, you know, played in Piccolotti's favor, and, you know, was able to steal a victory. I think had Gertz fought him a little bit different, he could have went out there and put on some little damage. But I don't know, maybe just, you know, it's a, you know, the game is, you know, it's a huge mental game. So if you go in there afraid of certain things that people have, you're not going to fight to your ability. Because, I mean, when I seen him fight Melvin Gallard, he went out there and threw that dude around. And, like, I'm pretty sure he could have taken down Piccolotti if he really wanted to. But I don't know. I mean, Piccolotti's tough, so I can't take anything from him. But I don't know, man. It just I guess it depends on what shows up. And, you know, he's always showing up to fight, I can tell you that much. So I know, you know, if he shows up to fight, we're gonna be in a nice little fist fight. But if he shows up hesitant, you know, I might be able to pick him apart from the outside. Shit, maybe if we hit the ground, I'll be able to out-scramble him. Who knows? Who knows what's going to happen?
What do you believe your key to victory is?
I mean, I always believe my power is, you know, because I'm one punch away from, you know, knocking anybody out. But, you know, I'm really confident in my ground game. You know, I don't show it too much. You know, unfortunately, I was on the bottom with Ben Henderson, but, you know, I think he thought he was going to submit me. You know, I know I heard his corner saying that he was supposed to submit me and whatever. And he is a good jiu-jitsu guy, but to me, none of those submissions were even close. You know, and because I'm, you know, I know how good my jiu-jitsu is. And I know when I actually attack my jiu-jitsu, I know I can catch people. And, you know, I kind of stared back to that a little bit, started working more on my jiu-jitsu, tightening up some things. So I believe if we hit the ground, I'll be able to submit him. If not, you know, I think my size and my power, I'll be able to outstrike him with my technique. So I think it kind of falls into my style, you know what I mean? Like wherever I want it to go. Not want it to go, but where the fight goes, I believe I could dominate those positions.
When did you realize that you had the gift of power?
You know what? It was my, I mean, I didn't realize it 100%, but it was my, was it my third professional fight? I went to Costa Rica and I fought in a tournament. It was supposed to be a 170-pound tournament, but when everybody weighed in at 170 to 185, they changed the rules when I got there. So it was actually a 185-pound tournament. And I think I weighed in with 172 with boots and shorts and everything on. And the second dude I fought was known to be a world champ kickboxer out there in Costa Rica. And he was coming to kill me. I remember he was coming swinging and I caught him with like a step back hook, I think, or something. And like kind of flying him out and then, you know, jumped on him. I think I ended up choking him out. But I dropped him and I was like, holy shit, I got power. And I didn't really even know how to throw a punch. I think I took that fight without really even training for that tournament. And since then, I noticed as I would hit people, they would fall. And I was like, dude, I'm not even, like, I don't know how to punch and I'm hurting people. So maybe if I learn how to punch, it'll get a little bit better. And so I started working my stand-up a lot more, and now we're here, you know?
So, you know, and I'm looking at your third fight, Wilbreth Montoya was your third win when you started 3-0. Like, so from that moment, how much longer did it take for you to realize, like, okay, I truly know how to throw a punch now?
Man, I'm still learning how to throw a punch. You know what I mean? Like, you think you know everything, and then and you realize you're still, you know, as long as I'm learning, I think I'm going to keep getting better. And there was a time in my career when I was like, I think when I was 5-0, I thought I was unbeatable. I thought I had everything down. And I didn't know a goddamn thing. And sure enough, I lost the fight. And that kind of showed me, like, hey, you're not invincible. Then I won, I think, two more. Then I was like, okay, now I'm back on that track where I kind of know everything. And I was a little bit cocky. And sure enough, I go lose two back-to-back, I believe. And then after that, you know, then it kind of woke me up and said, hey, dude, you don't know shit. Like, you got to learn. And I started learning more and getting better. So, I mean, I'm still learning, man. I'm still learning every day. There's technique that I, like, even basic stuff that I'm still learning that I'm excited about, you know. I'm excited about training. And so that's what's allowing me to learn more and become a better fighter at the fight.
And, of course, everyone's going to be able to see your fight here in the main event of Bellator 219 as you're going to be taking on Brandon Gertz-Syed. As always, man, I appreciate the time and love hearing the stories, man. We'll talk soon.
For sure, man. Thank you so much for your time, and we'll definitely talk soon.
I am now joined by a man that's going to step back inside the Bellator cage, Bellator 219. It's the caveman, David Rickles. David, how's it going, man?
What's up, man? It's good.
Very, very good to chat with you. It's been a long time, and I want to kind of start off with, I mean, everyone knows you are the definition of a Bellator veteran. What do you remember about your Bellator debut back in October of 2011.
I remember none of my friends could watch it because it was on MTV2. Shit, was that, who did I debut against?
That was Levi Avera.
Levi? Oh, shoot. Yeah, the dude I just made a bloody mess. That was a good time. Yeah, that was a really good time.
I mean, like, when you think about how you've grown as a martial artist from back in 2011 to now, what's the one thing that sticks out to you?
You know what? One of the funny things that, mentally, I feel like I'm starting to feel like a veteran. I think that's one of the biggest things that I've noticed personally is, like, I'm just starting to feel comfortable in that cage. Like, shit, I've been here 1,000 times, man. Like, this ain't nothing different. You know what I mean? So, I think that, like, veteran mentality is finally starting to kick in, and, you know, it feels good.
What's the difference in having a veteran mentality?
I don't know. Like, I think of, like, you know, guys like Jeremy Stevens and Donald Cerrone. It's kind of that fuck it attitude of, like, man, like, just whatever happens is going to happen out here. Like, let's put on a fucking show and have a good time.
And I feel like that's a great way to describe this matchup between you and AJ. I think there's no, everyone kind of knows going to this matchup what we should expect. And, action pack, you know, great. I know you used the word on IG, just a great scrap. Is that about the best way to describe this matchup?
Man, me and AJ have actually, that's so funny. When I fought Levi Avera, we were, after the fight, we were talking to AJ Matthews' manager at that time, and AJ's manager was like, whoop-de-whoop, blah, 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 like, AJ would whip your ass, blah, 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 you need to fight him, this and that, and we were like, shit, bring it on, you know? And so, X amount of years later, what, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 years later, here we go.
Have you ever had another fighter's manager start trash-talking you?
No. Well, I actually wasn't there. My coach was there. And they about got into a fist fight, from what I had heard. And it was pretty funny. But, you know, the funniest part about it, actually, is that, like, me and AJ Matthews have a lot of respect for each other. We're hella cool. I've enjoyed watching his fights. And, you know, I think vice versa, so... I think it's going to be exciting. I'm definitely looking to put him away. I feel like I'm a better fighter, so, and I'm sure he feels the same way. So we're about to find out.
I mean, speaking of your coaching staff, I remember watching your fight against Guillerme Bamba, where it was going to the third round and your coach goes, "Do you want this or not?" And I was sitting there, and I don't know if it was on the Paramount broadcast, but it was definitely on the DAZN broadcast. And I'm sitting there going, like, why don't we hear that more from coaches? Because he just felt like he was just being, man, brutally honest with you.
Yeah, for sure. No, 100%, man. And that's something that, me and my coach, as we watch fighters, we sometimes get confused. Like, why the fuck are his cornermen not telling him, like, dude, you have to knock this dude out? Like, oh, those were close rounds. No, they weren't. You got your ass whooped for 2 rounds. You got to win this third. What are you doing? You know, we've always been big on the brutally honest. Like, just tell me what the fuck is going on in there. So,
you know, I was mentioning about your IG account, and you'd had this picture up with your daughter holding a cake of EFC. And I thought it was interesting you said that your love for combat sports started with the WWE. So, like, do you remember, like, the first time you kind of saw it?
When I first watched WWE?
Yeah.
Is that what you're asking me? WWF.
Yeah. But in terms of what about what you saw made you realize you had a love for combat sports?
I started watching so early that, like, when I was watching wrestling, I thought it was real. So, you know, you're talking like I was 8, 9 years old. And, man, you know, when I watched those wrestlers out there, like, that was real to me. Mm-hmm. And I wanted so bad to be one of those guys. Like, you know, and this is before I'd ever seen really any boxing or any fighting at all. So, you know, I had nothing to compare it to. And just that, like, whipping somebody's ass mentality, like, you know, the trash talk, the entertainment of it, the walkouts, the music. I mean, it was just the most entertaining thing I could think of as a kid. And I definitely fell in love with it.
Now, of course, everyone knows you for, you know, the great, you know, walkouts, but, you know, you're coming into, you know, AJ's home state. You know, you're not in your hometown area. I mean, are you still kind of planning on doing something special that the fans need to make sure they tune in on DAZN and Bellator.com?
Dude, yes. All right. Everybody will be able to relate to this next walkout. Everyone, you know, hey, I might be in AJ's place, but people will give me some respect for this walkout. And it's going to be fun. I've been looking forward to doing this one. So
you get the win here. That'll be two in a row. Have you mapped out what you want this year to be?
Man, I just want to get wins and stack paper and pay off debts and shit. I just bought a new house. Things are looking good. Caveman's life as well. You know, as far as the fight game goes, like right now, I still am like very passionate. Like I love training. Like when I'm not in the gym, I feel like I'm missing out on something. I'm missing out on opportunities to learn new things. I'm still hiring. Like I just hired a new striking coach who's been helping me. You know, I'm still trying to get better. I think the, when I say I've adopted the veteran mentality, it's not that, like, you know, I'm not out here trying to get wins and stuff, and I don't care if I win or lose. Like, I most definitely want to win, but I'm just starting to feel comfortable in the cage, and it feels really good.
Was there something that's happened recently to where you realized you needed to bring in a new striking coach?
I got my ass whipped by MVP, bro. So, yeah, like... I actually, if I could be honest with myself, with him, you know, he was definitely on point that night and very good. But, man, I was mentally not where I needed to be for that fight. You could tell by me walking out in the second round. I had a lot of shit going on. But, you know, outside of that, like, I was like, man, I need to figure out what the fuck I'm doing. If I'm going to keep fighting, I'm not going to fight like that. I'll tell you that. Because that was like, in my, you know, in my view of myself as a fighter, like that's the last thing I want to ever do and be seen as. So I was like, man, if we're ever going to have a performance like that again, we don't need to fight anymore. And I need to figure out what it's going to take to get back on the right track. And, you know, I felt like I had a really good showing against Guilherme. And I think that I'm going to have a good showing here against AJ as well.
I mean, like, would you say, like, were you at, like, a crossroads type moment of, like, man, I got to make something now or this just isn't going to happen?
No, I mean, it was a crossroads of, like, dude, are you doing this for fucking money or are you really wanting to fight? Like, do you still want to bite down on your mouthpiece and get fucking mean with grown-ass men who want to do the same shit to you? So, like, it was that. Like, are you just doing this for a paycheck or do you still have passion for this game? And, you know, I figured out, man, that, like, I'm just very passionate still. You know, it kind of, like, I don't know, man. You kind of have up and downs in the fight game and just like life in general. And, you know, I kind of needed to get my ass whipped to get back on the burner and start working on things again.
Yeah, a final thing. When you watched Paige versus Paul Daly, were you like the rest of us and just were amazed by what was actually, I mean, cause I was there at Mohegan. You know, it was one of those things that into us that either this thing's going to be action-packed or it's going to be a 25-minute, not exciting fight. For you, like, as you're sitting there watching it, like, as a fighter, what was going through your mind?
Especially as a fighter who, like, was matched up against him. And all my coaches, everybody was like, bro, if you wrestle, this is an easy fight. And I was like, fuck that. I'm going to strike with him. And, like, in hindsight, I'm like, man, you know, I wish I would have shot a goddamn double leg or something. You know what I mean? But because I'm sorry, but Paul Daly is not a well-known wrestler. You know what I'm saying? And very well, it could have been the strategy, like, hey, I'm going to throw him off. I'm a striker. I'm going to wrestle. But it worked. And, you know, obviously not enough. He didn't win the fight. But I think that it exposed a huge hole in MVP.
And it was, man, I'll tell you, being there, it was one of the weirdest nights covering the sport, to be honest with you, man. It just was weird. Just a weird night. But look forward to seeing your fight here coming up on March 29th, Bellator 219. Dave, man, as always, I appreciate the time, and I'm looking forward to that walkout, man.
Thank you.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report is a man steps back inside the Bellator cage as he takes on Dominic Mezzada, Bellator 219 on Friday night, March the 29th. It's Sean Bunch. Sean, man, I appreciate the time. How's things been?
Hey, thanks for having me on. Everything's been good, man. Just finishing up the training camp, feeling good. Excited to go out there and compete next week and put on the show.
I mean, we're talking. We're, you know, 1 week out from the fight. Is this your what you would call hell week?
My hell week?
Yeah, you know, Fire's always talking about like that hell last week? Hard. Yeah, hell week, the last hard week of training. Yeah. Fire sometimes refers to that.
Nah, I don't call it hell week. Hell week is usually in the beginning of the camp, the first start. This is like more fine tuning. I'm already, you know, I'm where I need to be mentally and physically, so I'm just sharpening it up, fine-tuning, and just getting ready for next week.
Of course, we all, we saw you come back to Bellator, a tremendous win against Joe Warren, and of course, that was the first time we saw you since, 2015 in Bellator. How would you say has your mindset changed, now as opposed to then, or is it just kind of, you know what? You know, things just happen and everything's just clicking right now.
You know, mindset changed. I had to go all the way back to like the small regional shitty shows, and I had to prove myself just to make it back there. So, you know, it was a grind and a struggle just to get back into it, so to get that opportunity. So, you know, mindset definitely changed. You know, I matured more as a fighter. You know, I learned more, got more polished, you know, and training, and this is that grind just made that mindset trigger for me, and everything just kind of happened at the right time for me to get the opportunity, and I just showcased what I had to everyone.
Embracing the grind is something we hear from wrestlers all the time. What's your definition of that?
Embracing the grind. So, you know, you got to accept it, accept that grind, accept that, that struggle that you're going through, and just embrace and enjoy it. Just know that this is going to take you somewhere. And if you just accept it and don't be negative about it, just knowing that this is going to lead to something much better, and just embrace it. That's what I get from it.
And you go from fighting a former champion to another, you know, rising, you know, star in this division, just like yourself, Dominic Mezzada. What kind of gets you excited about what Dom brings to the table?
Just his, his history, what he has accomplished so far in his career. I think it's an exciting fight. It's a good, perfect matchup for me. He's a good person, for me to build on to and get to my end goal, which is to be the champ and get another shot at Darion Caldwell. So he's a good name, you know. He's been there with some great guys. He's came up short a couple for his two losses against two good fighters, and he's just a perfect person for me to get to that where I want to be.
You mentioned about you mentioned about this being the perfect matchup. What about this matchup it makes it perfect?
The timing, where I'm at in my career, his style for me, I think matches up perfectly. Those things, you know, everything's just right for me, I believe. If I just have to go out there and just do what I'm good at and compete, and I should be fine.
One of the cliches we always hear in the fight game is that the fight in front of you is the toughest fight of your career. If you believe that this is the toughest fight of your career, why is that?
Why is it the toughest fight of my career? Just, every fight, I would say the toughest fight, it's just because it's just the next one up. The next one on, just getting over the battle of waking up and just going through what I have to do to get to the fight. The training camp, the hours spent in the gym, every day just going through your mind, just mentally training, and then sometimes it's exhausting, just not being able to sleep right, eat right, cutting weight, everything. That's what I would say.
Is there anything that you want to prove to yourself and or the MMA fan that's going to tune in this matchup?
No, I don't really have to prove anything to myself. I know what I'm capable of doing. MMA fans don't know everything I'm capable of doing, but my team and my coaches, they know. And I just, not really trying to prove anything to anybody, but you just gotta tune in and watch, and you'll see that I, all the hard work I've been doing this whole time is, you know, it's paying off, and it's all gonna help me out. It's all been helping me out.
You mentioned something interesting a second ago about, you know, sleeping, and I've heard athletes talk about this where they'll say that's the one part of, you know, competing is understanding the how important sleep is. Is that something you've struggled with throughout your entire athletic career?
Yeah, definitely. Wrestling, fighting, just those competition nerves, you know, you want to do so well when you compete that sometimes you have a hard time just relaxing the mind and just sleeping. You're just overthinking things, you know. But there's other things you can do to help you out with this. But over the years, I've learned, you know, got better at dealing with this. But it's just something that, you know, athletes deal with, that the competition nerves. You got to know how to just, like, embrace it. Embrace this.
Fans have gotten a chance to get to know you over the past couple of years, the MMA fans, and of course, in your wrestling days. Is there something about you that fans would be surprised to know?
Something that fans would be surprised to know? Pretty much. I mean, I like to read. I don't know if fans might not know about me reading and doing my other activities, like on the side. I don't, nothing out of the ordinary. You know, I like to cook. Fans probably know that. They follow me on Instagram. They see me cooking, grilling, stuff like that. But nothing too crazy. Man.
So when the fight's over, you're back home after the fight. Is there a go-to meal that, like, you know, you're going to cook for yourself?
Yeah, I'll probably get on my Traeger grill, you know, get some ribs, smoke those bad boys on the grill, and then some ribs and steaks, ribs, chicken. Just put everything on the grill. My nickname is Grill Master Bunch. I'm always on the grill.
I can definitely feel that. You mentioned about reading books, and I've talked to other fighters who, you know, Henry Corral, Susan Bellator, he's always reading something. Is there a particular type of book that you like to read?
All types of books. I've been reading a lot of books on trading with stocks and whatnot. Just interesting stuff like that to me. I've been reading a lot of books on crypto, blockchain technology, stuff like that.
And of course, everyone's going to be able to see your fight come up here on Friday night, March the 29th. Bellator 219, and Sean is going to take on Dominic Mazzotta. Sean, man, I really appreciate the time. Look forward to seeing your fight, man.
Thanks for having me.
And there was my conversations with Alex Perez, Syed Awad, David Rickles, and Sean Bunch. I really appreciate all those fighters coming on this week's edition of the podcast to talk about their fights. Of course, we'll preview UFC and Fight Night in Philly and the Bellator card come here momentarily. Should note on the Sean Bunch and David Rickles, they'll be a part of the Postlim card, which according to the Bellator press release, will be streamed on the Bellator mobile app. Someone asked me if it's going to be on DAZN. I looked on DAZN. It did not look like it's going to be on DAZN, but the Bellator mobile app, I think it's a very good app. I've got it right here on my iPad, so you definitely, if you, some quality fights there, but we'll talk about that here in a little bit. But Daniel, last weekend, we did have the UFC and Bellator 218 on Friday night as Emmanuel Sanchez gets his second win against Georgie Karahanyan. Also, we had the come-from-behind victory there by Tokov getting the win there, part of Bellator 218. And of course, we also had UFC Nashville take place last weekend. Just kind of, touch on what happened at Bellator. Emmanuel Sanchez, obviously, once again, showing that he's, one of the best featherweights in Bellator. Johnny Eblen on the preliminary card getting unanimous decision win over Chauncey Foxworth. He is definitely someone to pay attention to here, but to me, really the talking point of this fight card has to be Emmanuel Sanchez getting that win, and Georgie just falling short once again against Emmanuel.
Yeah, absolutely, and this was obviously a much more clear-cut win for Emmanuel Sanchez in their first fight. Karahanyan came in, he wanted to take down Sanchez and stay on top of him. When he was able to do that for a round, it's somewhat, but Sanchez battled back. And at the end of the day, Emmanuel Sanchez took this fight to Karahanyan. If it did get to the ground, he was able to scramble and reverse. His stand-up looked good. And in this fight, you had Sanchez-Karahanyan in a rematch, and clearly Emmanuel Sanchez coming out of this one is the superior featherweight in Bellator. I mean, it's got a lot of momentum going forward. And then, the rest of the card, Linton Vassell, a disappointing outing for him against Valentin Modovsky. The thought was maybe at heavyweight, this would be it would be a win for Vassell, gain some momentum. He looked all right, to start this fight, but he started it to wear down. And this fight itself wasn't particularly great. Modovsky got the win there. And then, Tokov got the win over Harris. Harris looked great in that first round, only to get caught. But the guillotine choke for Anatoly Tokov, get another win. And this card itself was relatively forgettable. But as you mentioned, the story was the Sanchez-Karahanyan fight. And Emmanuel Sanchez kind of moves up in the world in the Bellator featherweight division.
And, of course, after we did the show last week in related to Bellator, DAZN announced that their monthly price is going up, even though if you are a current subscriber like myself, you're grandfathered in for $9.99 a month, or you can buy a year-long subscription for $100 a month, which I think is a very good deal. For myself, as a cord cutter, DAZN is kind of is a must-have for me to watch the Bellator product. I guess I should say to watch the Bellator product legally, because I know there's people out there that definitely watch the Bellator product illegally, but for me to watch it legally, I do have a DAZN subscription, and it's if you're not a cord cutter, I don't know how many Bellator or MMA fans have DAZN, but I'll say this, that if you're not a DAZN subscriber, you look at that April and May, there's gonna be a lot of value there for $20, and not trying to kiss up or be a shill for DAZN, just being honest, when you look at that the Bellator card on April 27th, which is going to be headlined by Rory and Fitch, part of the welterweight tournament, and then a week later you got the Canelo fight, and then a week later you got the Pitbull Chandler fight. So if you're not a DAZN subscriber, I think in that time period for $20, I think you're getting a lot of value. But I don't know how much DAZN raising their price to $19.99 a month. I don't think it's very beneficial to Bellator, but for me, I'm going to hop on that year long subscription price. I mean, $100, so it equals what, $8.50 a month, essentially. To me, it's a much better value than UFC Fight Pass is, essentially the same price.
Yeah. I mean, you just got to do that commitment, Jason. That big time 1 year commitment. I don't see any way. I'm probably going to do the $99.99 because I can't look at my dog Bear. I have a dog. His name is Bear. He's a Shih Tzu. I can't look him in the eyes and tell him, Bear, the reason why you're not eating the best kibble bits in the world is because I spent $20 on Bellator 219. Syed Awadra's Brandon Gertz. So I gotta go with the full $100 a year, Jason. I feel like they're holding me hostage with this $19.99 nonsense, all right? That's not an, I can't spend $20 because they have an awesome MLB recap show. Apparently they have this
well,
show.
Well, no, I think it's like an all-day thing. I was on the DAZN app last night, and I think it said like 1 p.m. to 7 p.m. Like, I think it's like essentially just like they go ballpark to ballpark and tell you what's going on.
That to me, I'm going to be honest with you, sounds pretty cool.
Like, to me, so tomorrow is opening day for baseball, and I'm a big fantasy baseball player. I'll probably sit in my office, and I'll put DAZN up on the television, and I'll just have that on just kind of as background noise and to kind of see what's going on there. But yeah, I mean, that's the problem with DAZN has is, you know, there's not a lot of content on there. I mean, you look at ESPN Plus, there's always so much content on there. But I think for $100 a month, I think it's great value, especially if you are a MMA and a boxing fan. The fact of you should be getting two Canelo fights a year, you know, two GGG fights a year, you know, or something along those lines. I think that for $100, I think it's a great value.
There's a lot of money laying around in DAZN, Jason. I mean, what do we have to do to pitch to DAZN to give us like $3 million to do a MMA podcast? I feel like we could do it. You know, if we get a really nice resume, I think me and you might be able to cash in on like a $4 million content deal.
DAZN, if you're listening, just send me the contract. We'll sign it.
We'll do it. We'll fight each other. We'll do bum fights. Like, I don't care, man.
Literally, we'll fly to New York every week.
Yeah, we will. Obviously, you pay for it. So yeah, we got to watch out. We can't talk about how good DAZN is because we don't want to do an ad for them before they pay us, right?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think overall it's a good product. I personally have not had streaming issues. You know, watching Bellator events, and one of the things, and what I do love what they do is the fact that ESPN does this as well, is where you can go on, and if you just want to watch a certain fight, you can go there. I mean, I think that's what they do well. But you know, I think if you're a television or a satellite customer and you have Paramount, I don't think DAZN is something that you're sitting there and getting every month. I mean, you look at this card coming up on Saturday or Friday, excuse me, with Bellator 219. It's not a sexy fight card that I think sits there and screams, I got to be in front of my television set on Friday night. I mean, look, I think Syed Awadra, Brandon Gertz will be a pretty fun fight to watch. I think that you're going to see two guys who will likely bite down their mouthpiece, sit in the center of the Bellator cage, and are just going to throw haymakers at each other. Daniel Strauss, the return of Daniel Strauss, when he had that accident, I think there was a lot of people that never thought that he would ever fight again. And, you know, and if you want a chance to listen to Daniel Strauss, go back to he was on Joe Rogan's podcast with Joe Schilling probably 6-9 months ago, and really talking about kind of his recovery and ultimately getting back to this place, taking on Shane Crutchin. Koreshkov, of course, was supposed to be here against Lorenz Larkin. That was supposed to be the main event. Mike Casper is stepping up on short notice. We got Joe Schilling versus Keith Barry. Those are your four fights on the pay-per-view. On the main card. You know, someone asked me, they said, you know, hey, why Schilling Barry on the main card as opposed to, say, Bunch Mazada? My thought was, Eska Schilling and Barry is likely going to end in someone getting knocked out, where Bunch and Mazada, I think, could really ultimately turn into a grappling type fight.
Yeah, it's simple, man. Bunch is a wrestler, Schilling's a striker, and he's an exciting one at that. So I mean, I didn't think Sean Bunch could absolutely get that. You know, that fight means more, I think, in the grand scheme of things. But Schilling Barry more likely to be entertaining, and you know, the rest of this card, it's all about, I don't know, redemption or getting some momentum back for a lot of these guys. I mean, Awad and Gertz are coming off losses. They're both pretty fun to watch lightweights, and I think it'll be a barn burner of a fight. I'm picking that one aside, Awad, and Koreshkov's coming off that loss to Lima. I mean, a fight against Larkin would have been interesting, but I think this one he's going to win pretty convincingly. I think there's a pretty big gap in talent. And then, like, Strauss, I mean, I'm looking forward to this. Jesus, he hasn't fought since 2017 because of the accident. The amount of freaking adversity he must have gone through to make this walk out. I mean, he already won there. We'll see how he looks in the cage. I mean, it takes a lot to compete at a high, high level that he did before the accident. So, I mean, he's facing a tough guy in Shane Kirkton. So, I don't know. I'm excited just to see Daniel Strauss. I hope things go well for him. And that, to me, is the thing I'm looking forward to the most out of Bellator 219, is just to see Daniel Strauss compete.
Now, there will be two fights before the main card that will be on DAZN and also on the Bellator mobile app and Bellator.com. Joey Davis, of course, one of those prospects to pay attention to in Bellator. He takes on Marcus Anthony. I believe this is actually the third opponent Joey Davis has gone through for this fight card. And the other preliminary bout is Dalton Rosa, Arasta, who's making his pro debut, taking on Cody Vidal. Dalton is a guy that, we've seen Bellator, sign these, pro debuts and put them on there. And sometimes it's what Bellator has to do. So, I'm interested to kind of see the pro debut there. When it comes to post-slim, the Bunch Mazada fight is a fight that definitely interests me. Rickles Matthews, I'm actually kind of surprised this ultimately, maybe they didn't do like a five-fight main card, just because I think that's a type of fight. I just expect those two guys to sit there and just throw, haymakers at each other. Outside of that, not anything really sticks out about the rest of the post-slim card to me.
Yeah. I agree with you. The card itself, it's all right. The next Bellator card will be better, Bellator 220. But, I think it's not the best week for MMA, and obviously there's one big fight we're looking forward to, but everything else is,
Look, that's a legit, and I'm glad you brought that up, Daniel. Like, look, all in Edson Barboza, Justin Gaethje. I will be in front of my television set on Saturday night to watch that fight. I mean, that fight will probably start, my guess, so you're probably in that 9:30 range is probably when that fight's going to start. Like, no matter what you're doing, you should be in front of the television fight, because whether that fight lasts 2 minutes or it lasts 25 minutes, it should be one hell of a fight. This is a fight that but outside of that fight, what's the number two fight of the weekend?
I know, man, that's a tough question. I think it's gotta be, before the podcast, you talked to me about it, about how this probably should have been the co-main event. But the number two fight, I think, is Kovalkiewicz versus Michelle Waterson. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, you talked about it, right? Like, that to you look like what should have been the co-main event fight in this fight card?
Yeah. I mean, to me, and the fact of on ESPN Plus, they did that UFC Destin special. It's on Kovalkiewicz and Waterson. I'm just really surprised that that's not the co-main event. The co-main event being David Branch and Jack Hermanson. I mean, that it's like you just look at all these fights, and I think there's, Daniel Strauss is probably the biggest story of the weekend, in terms of, coming back from what he's come back from that motorcycle accident. But in terms of the number two fight, I feel like if I walked into a sports bar tonight and it was 10 MMA fans and I put the Bellator card in front of them, I put the UFC fight card in front of them, and I'm going to sit and say, okay, we all know the best fight of the weekend is Edson Barboza, Justin Gaethje. If I go, what is the second best fight? I make it five or six answers.
Absolutely. And that just speaks not to the fact that it's a great fight weekend. It's a weekend with a lot of fights. A lot of fighters people may not know.
I would probably say Kovalkiewicz and Waterson.
Yeah. Oh, that's what I would say without a doubt.
Okay, if you sit there and said, then what's number three? Oof, I don't know.
Yeah, I think that one, it might be Emmett versus Michael Johnson. I guess, to be honest with you, though, I'm looking forward to see what happens in the fight between Paul Craig and Kennedy Sichukwu. And maybe how you say his name. I'm pretty sure. Look, if Kennedy looks good, we'll know how to say his last name after this weekend.
Hey, so it took us a while to learn how to say Carolina Kovalkiewicz.
There goes a while to learn how to say Ngannou. It turns a while to learn how to say Janjacek. Jason still doesn't know how to say it. So we will absolutely learn his name, Jason, if he looks good. He's undefeated going up against Paul Craig. But to be honest with you, the more I think about it, I think the Daniel Strauss fight is probably number three for me.
Yeah, and should be noted that the prelims start at 3:30 p.m. Eastern time, and then the main card will start at 7 p.m. Eastern time. So love the early start time. Sadiq Youssef is someone on the UFC fight card that definitely is someone to pay attention to in terms of his rise up. You know, Josh, I don't know what to expect out of Josh Emmett against Michael Johnson. You know, I think there's a kind of a lot of uncertainties there. You know, Team Alpha Male has not done well in the UFC this year, so something to pay attention to there. Casey Kenney, I'm actually going to have an interview on the MMAreport.com this week. I'm actually speaking to him later on this afternoon. He's stepping up here. He just won LFA last Friday night. He had won the interim bantamweight title. He was the interim flyweight champion there. And now he takes on Ray Borg. So really interested to kind of talk to him about kind of this journey for him in terms of everything you know that has gone on with him. You know, when it comes to the rest of the fight card, man, the Kevin Holland Gerald Merchart fight, I don't know what's going to happen there. I mean, if it's a stand up fight, I expect Kevin Holland to win. But if Merchart takes him to the ground, that could definitely be someone that he takes him to the ground there. But overall, I mean, look, it's at the end of the day, you're sitting down to watch UFC Fight Night on Saturday. It's because of that main event, and you know, I mean, look, both these guys, I mean, they're both massive leg kickers. That's what both Barboza and Gaethje do. Different type of leg kicking between the two. You know, Gaethje really uses a lot to kind of set up his strikes, where Barboza, I mean, he just, you know, hammers them out there. It is one of those fights that you always wonder, will this be the fight that Justin Gaethje uses wrestling? I still say no.
Jason, that would be smart, but I sure hope not. Because I have been looking forward to the stand-up war since the day has been announced. And even though it would be smart to throw the curveball, especially if your curveball, you know, has a nice little spin on it with the wrestling, I want to see Gaethje and Barboza throw some bungalows and throw some leg kicks and whatnot. You know, I got a little taste of it with Anthony Pettis, Stephen Thompson with the leg kick exchange. But here, I want a great fight.
We didn't even talk about that fight.
Yeah. Yeah, so I mean that happened last week, and I'm looking forward to this one. I think it's going to top it. But I mean, if you want to talk about that fight card, we can definitely talk about that fight, because I tell you what, that fight card very similar to this one in that that fight card was all about that top fight, and everything else was hit or miss.
Man, just you know, I mean, look, the thing with you know, before we just go back to what happened last week in the UFC, just on Gaethje Barboza, you know, I think the thing you have to wonder is, does Barboza and his game plan with this is okay? We know there's going to be about 6 to 8 minutes of pure fury from Justin Gaethje. Is the game plan of, let's just weather that, let's get this into the third and fourth round, and maybe see if we can maybe take advantage of maybe a worn-down Justin Gaethje? That'd be the question mark. But, yeah, when you look back at last week's UFC, I mean, you know, it wasn't going well for Anthony Pettis early on. It was not going well for him at all. And then, oh my God, what a punch he lands. And Stephen Thompson, I mean, man, it's one of those things with Stephen Thompson, you wonder, is age catching up to him? I mean, look, he's, what, 36 years old now? But that was just an unbelievable knockout by Anthony Pettis. You know, Justin Willis, he was talking up a good game last week, but man, that was a one-sided beatdown by Curtis Blaydes. I mean, just Justin Willis couldn't do anything, and I think it really just kind of showed, you know, where, you know, Justin Willis has a long way to go there. You know, when it comes to the rest of the event, McDessie and Pinedo, that was not a fun fight to watch. Luis Pena, I thought, looked pretty good against Steven Peterson. You know, obviously the question mark is with, can he, you know, make 145 pounds? Macy Barber. A great win for her on the main card.
Yeah. I mean, on the main card, Timmy Macy Barber, man, she was on the ropes in that first round. Looked a little dangerous there against J.J. Aldrich, you know. It's like, all the hype is gone. And then she returns in that second round, drops Aldrich, finishes her with strikes. For Macy Barber, a nice little step in the right direction. Definitely not an A-plus on the exam, but she certainly passed. You mentioned Pena. I mean, just find him. It's all about the weight cut, I think, for him, because he showcases great potential, and he looks so good in every facet of the fight. Also on that main card, Formiga Figueredo was a good fight and a great performance out of Juicier Formiga against an undefeated fighter heading into that one. But that main event, Yeah, I mean, look, Anthony Pettis isn't the greatest thing in the world at 170. He was fighting a much bigger fighter, and he was not winning this fight until he won this fight. Then it was like, damn, Anthony Pettis, next welterweight champion? Probably not, Jason. But I will say this. It was surprising to see this, but it was a question, absolutely was, would Anthony Pettis, I mean, since the day he jumped off the cage and paintbrushed Benson Henderson's face with his foot, we've known he's a violent and explosive fighter when he wants to be, when he can be. But the question was, is he going to maintain that power and that danger at 170 pounds? And the answer is yes. He answers yes to that Superman punch. At 170 pounds, Anthony Pettis apparently has the ability to put away anybody. And that's a very dangerous thing. And if you're the UFC, I think that's a breath of fresh air, because Anthony Pettis fighting that welterweight sounds great to me. Anthony Pettis versus Darren Till, I would watch that 100%. And also, down the line, long term, look, let's talk about this. Kamaru Usman, when you look at all the champions in the UFC, he is the one I think that probably needs the most help with making a name for himself. I still think Kamaru Usman doesn't mean a lot to your casual fan currently. And I think the one way to do it is to put him in championship fights against opponents that people care about. Ben Askren, you know, maybe Colby Covington will get some air there. And, you know, if Usman is successful in some of these title defenses, down the line, Anthony Pettis, who is a name, a commodity, he could be an interesting challenger for Usman in terms of getting eyeballs on the product. But you got to be smart with how you match Anthony Pettis up in the welterweight division.
Dude, Usman would wrestle him to death.
I know. And it's not about the fight. It's all about getting to the fight.
Yeah, I get that. Because
you put it on a poster, Usman versus Pettis, people want to see Pettis. And this was a thought I've had, is like the UFC is relying, I think, on these stars that were made 7 to 8 years ago. Cerrone, Pettis, all these guys. There are some people that have been made recently, but they really need to use these guys to put over the next generation of stars already.
Yeah, yeah. But I will definitely be watching on Saturday night for Barboza and Gaethje. Looking forward to that one. Probably most likely watch the Bellator card after the fact. But yeah, it's not the greatest of MMA weekends, but we'll definitely be here to talk about the fights. Of course, next week we'll be got a bunch of interviews I'm recording later on today. So we'll have some interviews up on the MMAreport.com. So be sure to check that out. Be sure to give me a follow on Twitter at Jason_Floyd. Daniel is at Daniel Galvan DGG. So that is going to wrap it up for this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast. I do want to thank Alex Perez, Syed Awad, David Rickles, and Sean Bunch for all coming on this week's edition of the show. Of course, a new episode of the MMA Report podcast comes out every Wednesday. Be sure to subscribe, rate, review, Apple Podcast, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, TuneIn, all the podcasting apps were available there. And of course, it always comes out on RadioInfluence.com.
This is the Landry Football with Chris Landry. Quick fix on Radio Influence.
Larry asks, or nice comment. Appreciate that. he was asking, is there any reason why we aren't seeing college football programs under investigation anymore? I find it hard to believe that everyone is behaving these days. Well, Larry, a couple of things. The investigative arm of the NCAA is just powerless. What's happened with the NCAA, and it could be traced a little bit to the Penn State Sandusky situation, the Miami situation, where they were basically couldn't prove it, and basically the school lawyered up and sued them, and the NCAA realized that they don't have the enforcement arm to investigate a lot of this. They rely on media reports about, you know, this happened and that happened. You know, if you look at it, and because it's this time of year, the LSU and the Arizona basketball situation, you know, where, you know, I think it was Yahoo Sports uncovered some stuff. If they hadn't covered it, no one would know about it. The NCAA is not out following every nook and cranny, and they don't have the resources to do that. They just take apart what the media says, they follow up on it, they investigate, and what they do is they threaten that if you don't cooperate as a university, you're going to be hit hard.
Chris Landry brings you Landry Football every week on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, RadioInfluence.com.